Reggae Uprising with your host, Denise.
Greetings, Reggae Uprising podcast family, and welcome to another episode. Now, if you are fresh and new to Reggae Uprising podcast, it is all about connecting the African diaspora through wisdom, overstanding, inspirational stories, all backed by a soundtrack of sweet reggae music. So usually what happens is each and every Wednesday we feature a new guest who shares their works, their wisdom, alongside seven reggae selections. So these inspirational high frequencies act as the soundtrack to their episode. If you are a regular listener of Reggae Uprising podcast, thank you so much for all of your support. You know, I know some of you have been listening right from the very beginning, from the start of 2020. Thank you so much for your love, support. Thank you for sharing these works. Thank you for your beautiful comments. It really does mean so much and is the whole reason why this show came into being in the first place. For those of you that are new, if you haven't already subscribed, please do so now. You're going to want to subscribe. You're going to want this weekly dose of positivity and high frequency in your week. Trust me, you are. So you can subscribe, obviously, wherever you're listening to the podcast right now. But the best place to connect, as the connection will never break, is via danielle.live. So if you go to www.danielle.live. Not only will you have reminders of fresh new shows from Reggae Uprising podcast, while you're there, you can check out all of those other high frequency shows, the high vibrations of reggae music that is there, and so, so much more. I'm not going to say too much because once you get into it, you know exactly what I mean. So like I said, danielle.live, so that's danielle.live, is the best place to subscribe. Also, while you're there, if you click on the podcast page, we have over 3 years of episodes for you to check out. You know, listen to that wisdom, listen to that high frequency of reggae music that is there for you from brothers and sisters from all over the world. So go through our archive, and I'm sure whatever you pick, there will be a reason as to why you selected to that episode and exactly what you needed to hear in that moment. Yeah. You will also notice that we do have our special editions, our special series from time to time that focus on a particular person or a subject or a historical interest that has been shown by one of our listeners or multiple listeners that we focus on. So if you hadn't already guessed by the title of this episode, The Reality of the Windrush Experience, yes, this is one of those episodes. So the first episode, The Windrush Soundwave, this second episode, The Reality of the Windrush Experience, both of these episodes have been produced to empower future generations whilst giving thanks to all the elders whose tenacity and resilience are an inspiration to us all. Disclaimer: this episode does not feature the opinions of Reggae Uprising podcast or its host. All extracts shared and sources of information are listed within the episode's description. The intention of these two special Windrush episodes is to inspire you to delve deeper, to do your own due diligence, unveiling the truth of our past in order to give light to our future. Welcome to the reality of the Windrush Experience. Overview. It soon became apparent that World War II's after effects were still heavily impacting the UK's infrastructure. People of the UK were suffering from PTSD and malnourishment due to long periods of food rationing. Pregnant women were prescribed bananas after the war to help boost their vitamin and mineral intake. it may be little known that at this time it was now possible for bananas along with sugar, which were in high demand, to be imported from Jamaica to the UK, rapidly boosting the Jamaican economy and in turn raising Jamaica's currency value. Shortages in various UK industries and systems were having a detrimental effect on the people of the UK. Probably the most documented example of this is through the National Health Service. The lesser known but equally important bus drivers, builders, factory workers, and highway workers were also in high demand. All of these factors instigated the British government, on behalf of the King, to post an invitation to residents of the Commonwealth countries, also known as the former British colonies, to come to the UK to help rebuild the country. On the 22nd of June 1948, the ship HMT the Windrush Empire delivered its passengers at Tilbury Docks, Essex, where the first steps to a whole new world for mothers, wives, daughters, fathers, husbands, and sons of the Caribbean were taken. For some, this journey from the Caribbean to London had taken over a month and was the third of its kind. This journey is the most cited as it is the most highly documented with the greatest number of Caribbean passengers. Those making this journey would have been regarded as affluent Caribbeans and not an option for every Jamaican person. So although the UK had asked for help to rebuild their country, those volunteering were expected to pay for the privilege, as there were no subsidies on tickets and no free rides. Of the 1,027 passengers on a voyage from Jamaica to London, 802 cited their last country of residence as somewhere in the Caribbean, and 693 of them undertook the voyage with the intention of laying new foundations for their family in the UK. Coverage of the Windrush's arrival in the media spared no expense, as the Evening Standard chartered an aircraft to photograph the ship from the air whilst in the English Channel. This made the Evening Standard's front page. Other newspaper reporters covered the arrival, as well as Pathé News newsreel cameras. Other passengers included Jamaican, Sam Beaver King, who voyaged to the UK to rejoin the RAF, but would later help found the Notting Hill Carnival, as well as becoming the first black mayor of Southwark. Trinidadian and Tobagan calypso musicians Lord Kitchener, Lord Beginner, Lord Woodbine, and Mona Baptiste also bought their Caribbean frequencies, shaking up the UK's music scene. History. In 1948, en route from Australia to Britain via the Atlantic, HMT Empire Windrush arrived in Kingston, Jamaica, to pick up members of the armed forces who were on leave. Amongst others, there were two primary reasons that people of the Caribbean decided to take the journey to an island with a track record of horrific atrocities inflicted on their immediate families and ancestors. The first reason to take the arduous journey to the so-called land of milk and honey was a promise of a better future with greater prospects for those brave enough to risk it all. The second reason concerned those who were aware of the UK's political stance on the Caribbean. with knowledge of the UK government's future intentions of enforcing immigration controls, the Caribbean people were proactive in utilising the British Nationality Act 1948. This act gave the status of citizenship to not only the UK citizens, but also to people of the countries it had previously colonised, also known as Citizenship of the United Kingdom and Colonies, or CUKC. As the UK didn't issue any immigration controls for CUKCs until 1962, whatever the reasoning behind those that decided to leave, this meant that they could lay foundations for themselves and build for their families in the UK without restriction or deportation. Or so they thought. This is something we will elaborate on later. On arrival, people were temporarily housed in the Clapham South Deep Shelter in southwest London if they were not staying with family or had made prior arrangements. Cold Harbour Lane Employment Exchange in Brixton, approximately 1 mile away, would have been one of the closest places to this accommodation to initially source work. Most only intended to stay a few weeks and return home, but ended up laying foundations and building lives in the UK. These people are now collectively considered the Windrush generation. I will now read an extract from the government website with regards to the Windrush generation. In line with the advice of UK Caribbean community stakeholders who have worked on previous iterations of the scheme, we define the Windrush generation as those people who emigrated from the Caribbean to the United Kingdom between the arrival of the MV Empire Windrush on the 22nd of June 1948 and the Immigration Act 1971, their descendants and the wider UK Kingdom Caribbean community. The MV Empire Windrush arrived at the port of Tilbury on the 21st of June 1948 and its passengers disembarked a day later. The ship carried several hundred Caribbean migrants, many of them veterans of the Second World War. Since then, the Windrush has come to symbolise the first movement of mass migration to the United Kingdom in the post-war era. Ship. The HMT Empire Windrush was originally MV Monte Rosa. HMT stands for His Majesty's Transport, and MV stands for Motor Vessel. The MV Monte Rosa was a passenger liner and cruise ship, which first launched in Germany in 1930, which during World War II was used by the German Navy as a troop ship, carrying soldiers to their mission destinations. The end of World War II terminated the ship's German ownership, as the British government seized it as a prize of war and gave it its well-known title of the HMT Empire Windrush. During and after World War II, UK government merchant ships all had the word Empire at the start of all the ships' names. There were approximately 1,300 so-called Empire ships, and Empire Windrush was one of around 60 ships named after British rivers. The Windrush River is approximately 40 miles, starting at the Cotswold Hills in Gloucestershire through Bourton-on-the-Water, Burford, Whitney, Ducklington, Standlake, and meets the Thames at Newbridge. Government and the law. As termed by Labour and Conservative governments, the coloured immigration was a great concern to MPs and people of the UK. There were countless attempts in a variety of ways to ensure a hostile environment in the UK, specifically for people of the Caribbean, so as to deter them from making the UK their permanent residence. After World War II, the labour shortage stood at approximately 1,346,000. In power at the time, the Labour government strategy to solve this monumental problem was through their Whites Only programme. This consisted of ex-prisoners of war, Polish ex-servicemen, followed by the European Voluntary Workers or EVW scheme to become the UK's new workers. Their solution, however, was a flawed strategy as the EVWs held a status of aliens, which meant they were held by far greater employment restrictions than that of Caribbean migrants who had status of British citizens. Previous to the UK's employment shortages, thousands of Caribbeans had been part of the war effort in the armed forces and as technicians. After the war, some returned home, but over 3,000 decided to stay in the UK. Even though those that remained in the UK were subject to many hardships inflicted on them by the British people and government, irrespective of the fact that they had just fought a war for them, these servicemen still encouraged family members to move to the UK. There were many migrations from the Caribbean to the UK after the war, previous to the Empire Windrush. For example, British troop ships, Ormonde, arrived in May 1947 with approximately 110 ex-servicemen, followed by over 200 on the Almanzora in December 1947. However, the Empire Windrush's Caribbean passenger numbers terrified the Labour government. Their opposition was apparent through the government personnel sent to Jamaica to spread propaganda, informing that there were no jobs in the UK and that life there would be made unpleasant for them. The contrast of how white Australian or Canadian Commonwealth citizens were treated was stark. They were not subjected to the same treatment. Being viewed as of European heritage, they were received with open arms as settlers. Desperate as the UK was for workers, the government was willing to forego the well-being of its own people for the sake of its own prejudices and racist ideologies. They even influenced the governments of the Caribbean colonies to discourage its own people from travelling to the UK. 3 days before the Empire Windrush's arrival, the Secretary of State for the Colonies, Arthur Creech Jones, wrote a cabinet memorandum detailing the Jamaican government could not legally prevent people from departing, and the British government could not legally prevent them from landing. Although there were no legal powers, he made it clear that the government was opposed to this immigration and all possible steps would be taken by the Colonial Office and the Jamaican government to discourage it. I will now read from a source. Links can be found in the description. A letter of June 22nd, 1948, sent by 11 Labour MPs to Prime Minister Clement Attlee said, "This country may become an open reception centre for immigrants not selected in respect to health, education, training, character, customs, and above all, whether assimilation is possible or not. The British people, fortunately, enjoy a profound unity without uniformity in their way of life and are blessed with the absence of a colour racial problem. An influx of coloured people domiciled here is likely to impair the harmony, strength, and cohesion of our public and social life and cause discord and unhappiness among all concerned. In our opinion, colonial governments are responsible for the welfare of their people, and Britain is giving these governments great financial assistance to enable them to solve their population problems. We venture to suggest that the British government should, like foreign countries, the dominions and even some of the colonies, by legislation, if necessary, control immigration in the political, social, economic and fiscal interests of our people. In our opinion, such legislation or administrative action would be almost universally approved by our people. With regards to the law, the British Nationality Act 1948 was an act of the Parliament of the United Kingdom, which defined British nationality by creating the status of citizen of the United Kingdom and Colonies, or CUKC, as the sole national citizenship of the United Kingdom and all of its colonies. This act was passed after the 1947 Commonwealth Conference on Nationality and Citizenship. This act turned away from the previous imposition of having to swear allegiance to the Crown to be a British subject. The term British subject was made equal to the new term of Commonwealth citizen. This new status of CUKC for people born or naturalised in the United Kingdom or one of its colonies also enabled citizenship to be gained by descent from a CUKC or by registration. Naturalisation is defined by the Cambridge Dictionary as the process of becoming or making someone a citizen of a country that they were not born in. It unwittingly enabled victims of colonisation an equal footing with people actually living in the British Isles. Some surmise that this may have been the UK government's attempt to avoid the inevitable decolonisation of their empire. As far as the government and the people of the UK were concerned, the perceived threat of non-white people migrating was an impossibility at this time, as their own ignorance stemmed from their inbred prejudice underestimated the Caribbean people. This continued to be a bone of contention for decades until finally 1962 ushered in immigration restrictions on Commonwealth countries. Numerous acts of law followed, increasing restrictions alongside acts of prejudice and unadulterated racism. In accordance with the law, the British Nationality Act 1948 is still relevant, in theory. We will go into more detail as to why its status could be defined as theoretical later. But for now, this is what the government website states at the time of this recording with regards to British citizenship for Commonwealth citizens. If you're a Commonwealth citizen, you may be eligible to apply for citizenship under the Windrush scheme if both you or one of your parents arrived in the UK before 1973, you've lived in the UK and not been away from it for more than 2 years. If your parent arrived in the UK before 1973, you must have either been born in the UK, arrived in the UK before you were 18. Some Commonwealth citizens have right of abode in the UK. This means you can live or work in the UK without immigration restrictions. Scandal. It seems the, quote, discord and unhappiness expressed by MPs so many decades ago with regards to the so-called coloured people migrating to the UK had not diminished over time. By 2018, deporting the Windrush generation was still very much on the agenda. Not only did the Home Office deport, wrongly detain or hold in custody and deny people their legal rights, but subsequently an undocumented number of victims were denied medical care, had their passports seized, lost their jobs, lost their homes, and some even lost their lives. This political scandal was instigated under the guise of the Hostile Environment Policy, introduced in 2012 and later implemented by Conservative Home Secretary Theresa May, in which she stated that, quote, the aim is to create here in Britain a really hostile environment for illegal immigrants. The Hostile Environment Policy is now known as the Compliant Environment Policy. The policy enlisted the likes of the NHS, landlords, banks, and employers to enforce immigration controls, effectively making it impossible for the now undocumented people of the Windrush generation to live in the UK. A large number of the Windrush generation arrived to the UK as children, which meant they travelled on their parents' passports. The Home Office, being aware of this, destroyed thousands of landing cards and other vital documents that would act as proof that they had the right to live in the UK. The Home Office subsequently set about demanding a minimum of one official document for every year these people had lived in the UK, which for most people would have spanned decades. When people were unable to provide these documents, they were regarded as illegal immigrants and or undocumented migrants. This policy is now widely considered the most stringent immigration policy documented in the UK. Not only was it unlawful and gave rise to racist ideals, it completely disregarded equality laws as found by the Equality and Human Rights Commission. Their harmful and unjust treatment provoked widespread condemnation of the government's failings, with calls for radical reform of the Home Office and UK's immigration policy. In response to these demands, then Home Secretary Sajid Javid announced in May 2018 that the Home Office would commission a Windrush Lessons Learned review. The review was undertaken by the Inspector of Constabulary, Wendy Williams, in March 2020. She reported that the Home Office had tightened immigration regulations, quote, with complete disregard for the Windrush generation. It also stated that officials made irrational demands for numerous documents to establish residency rights. Deportation and incarceration were high on the agenda, but access to medical care was also denied by the NHS. It is insurmountable to establish the impact that this had on people's lives, health, and the knock-on effects to their families and their mental health. The number of lives lost from the impact of lack of medical care and the psychological trauma inflicted, as far as we have been able to attain, is unknown. As if these tangible violations weren't enough, the next strategy was through fiscal termination. Access to money was revoked, along with access to jobs. The final implementation was the Right to Rent scheme, which effectively made some people homeless and others exploited by their landlords. Key dates read as follows. 14th of March 2013. Prime Minister's private secretary writes to Cabinet Minister David Laws, setting out the aspirations for new legislation to restrict irregular migrants' access to the private rental sector. 8th of May 2013. Queen's speech announces a new immigration bill. 3rd of July 2013. Government consultation on the private rental sector provisions of the proposed bill opens. 21st of August 2013. Government consultation on the private rental sector provisions of the proposed bill closes. 10th of October 2013. Government response to the consultation published. Immigration bill receives first reading in Parliament. 14th of May 2014. Immigration Act 2014 given royal assent. 1st of May 2014. Phase 1 of the Right to Rent scheme goes live in Birmingham, Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton. 21st of May 2015. Prime Minister David Cameron gives a speech announcing nationwide rollout of the Right to Rent scheme and intent to introduce new eviction powers. 3rd of September 2015. JCWI publish evaluation of phase one of Right to Rent, no passport, no home. 17th of September 2015. immigration bill has its first reading in Parliament. 20th of October 2015. Home Office publishes its evaluation of Phase 1 of Right to Rent. 1st of February 2016. Phase 2 of Right to Rent launched, with the scheme rolled out across England. 12th of May 2016. Immigration Act 2016 given royal assent. February 2017. JCWI published their second report on the operation of the Right to Rent scheme, Passport Please. 28th of March 2018. Independent Chief Inspector for Borders and Immigration publishes his report on the Right to Rent scheme. 27th of June 2018. The Home Affairs Committee published their report, The Windrush Generation. 1st of March 2019. The High Court finds the right to rent provisions of the 2014 Immigration Act unlawful. The Home Office lodges an appeal. 30th of April 2019. 87 MPs write a letter requesting the Equalities and Human Rights Commission investigate the Home Office's hostile environment policies. Wendy Williams, Inspector of Constabulary, who undertook the Windrush Lessons Learned Review in March 2020, in her response to whether the Home Office is institutionally racist, she stated, "While I am unable to make a definitive finding of institutional racism within the department, I have serious concerns that these failings demonstrate an institutional ignorance and thoughtlessness towards the issue of race and the history of the Windrush generation within the department, which are consistent with some elements of the definition of institutional racism." I will now read an extract from a publication by Human Rights Watch. In 2022, a leaked internal report by a historian commissioned by the Home Office revealed that during the period 1950 to 1981, every single piece of immigration or citizenship legislation was designed at least in part to reduce the number of people with black or brown skin who were permitted to live and work in the UK, deeming citizens from former colonies not to belong to the UK. The Home Office told Human Rights Watch that the report would not be published because the views expressed in it were those of the author alone and did not represent government policy. The Home Office has since admitted that its policies have a disproportionate impact on ethnic and racial minorities. I will now read an extract from Independent Report, Windrush Lessons Learned Review, Progress Update, published the 31st of March, 2022. I am sure most people would agree that it was courageous of the Home Office to ask an external independent advisor to carry out a review of the events leading up to what became known as the Windrush scandal, and to review its policy making, practices, operational functions, and approaches to fairness and due process, whether in relation to those who are members of the organisation or those whom the department serves. I'm equally sure that many aspects of my resultant report proved to be a challenging read. If such were the case, it has been even more courageous of the department to invite me back to review its progress 18 months on. The issues I defined and recommendations made in my original report could have appeared to some to be a daunting challenge to present to the department and its staff. But such a view would fail to see the recommendations in the broader context of how organisations achieve good standards of public administration. For the most part, the changes I proposed reflect established principles and practices for how public bodies should be undertaking their responsibilities and, as such, are not additional to day-to-day functions. Rather, they are inbuilt as the natural way for the organisation to run. Treating people fairly and with compassion, using insights gained through effective engagement with experts, the public and those who represent them, and being responsive to the changing needs of the citizens a department serves, as well as having a workforce which is highly trained and supported to produce the best results, and which naturally reflects the diverse range of communities it serves at all levels, are all features which high-performing organisations regard as the norm. If the department regarded my challenge as daunting, there can be no doubt that it has risen to that challenge. At some levels, it has set about implementing my recommendations with vigour and determination, even challenging itself to be ambitious and on occasions going beyond the letter of them and seeking to achieve the spirit behind them. It is understandable that in an organisation as large as the Home Office, the scale of change envisaged in my report takes time. I am not surprised, nor indeed disappointed, that in a number of areas, my conclusion has been that a recommendation has been unmet. I will now read an extract from Conservative MP and the Secretary of State for the Home Department, Suella Braverman's statement made on the 26th of January 2023. The Home Office regularly reviews the best way to deliver against the intent of Wendy Williams' Windrush Lessons Learned review. As such, after considering officials' advice, I have decided not to proceed with recommendations 3, run reconciliation events, 9, introduce migrants commissioner, and 10, review the remit and role of the independent chief inspector of borders and immigration in their original format. On the 26th of January 2023, Black Equity Organisation sent legal papers to Suella Braverman for refusing to implement all of the recommendations from the review into the Windrush scandal. They are seeking a judicial review of the Home Secretary's unlawful decision. On the 6th of April 2023, they delivered a petition signed by over 50,000 people urging the Home Secretary to rethink her decision, and a letter to the Prime Minister signed by Windrush survivors, community groups, and celebrities. The unravelling of this scandal is still very much spiralling, as days before this Windrush special was set to be publicised, more darkness came to light. Documents that had previously been classified are now available for public scrutiny. These documents from the National Archives reveal that a minimum of 411 long-term sick and mentally ill people were deported to the Caribbean between the 1950s and early 1970s under the guise of a voluntary scheme. Families were torn apart, with some never seeing each other again. Comprehensive records have not been kept by government departments on these victims, so no one knows the real number of people. Not only were the long-term sick manipulated or forced into this so-called voluntary scheme, targeting those who didn't even have the mental capacity to agree is seen by the consensus as unlawful and inhumane. Compensation. In the Windrush Lessons Learned review, starting at page 166, is a glossary of terms. I will now read its explanation of Windrush Compensation Scheme. A scheme intended to provide financial payments to members of the Windrush generation or their descendants, heirs, or close family members who did not have the right documentation to prove their lawful rights to live in the UK and suffered losses or impacts on their lives as a result. In April 2019, the Home Office opened the Windrush Compensation Scheme. To be eligible for the scheme, you must complete a 44-page form in which you must provide evidence of what it calls impact on life due to the implementation of the Hostile Environment Policy. The Home Office states that the reason for the current version of the form being longer than previous versions is, quote, the scheme has been designed to be as clear and simple as possible, so people do not need legal assistance to make a claim. Victims of the scandal were now being told again to provide documentation to the very institution that had previously violated their human rights and been proven to act illegally, with no individuals facing prosecution. Some have surmised that the hidden agenda was to appear to recognise these unlawful acts by going through the motions of setting up the scheme, whilst anticipating that a majority would not want to interact with an institution that had previously persecuted them. It could also be viewed as the insidious nature of UK institutions, coupled with their contempt for the very existence of the African diaspora, make it highly probable that this scheme is a continuation of ill intent via data collection, all under the guise of an inadequate settlement. By January 2023, only 12.8% of the estimated 11,500 eligible claimants had been compensated. I will now read an extract from a publication by Human Rights Watch. The Home Office has created five categories of Windrush claimants based on their losses and how the lack of recognised lawful status affected them. Level 1 is described as inconvenience, annoyance, frustration and worry, where the effect on the claimant was fairly short-lived, in brackets, lasting up to a few weeks, which the Home Office compensates with an award of £10,000. Level 5 is described as profound impacts on a claimant's life, which are likely to be irreversible, with an award of £100,000 or, in exceptional cases, more. The Home Office's Windrush Schemes Fact Sheet, January 2023, shows that by the end of January 2023, 100 claimants had received compensation offers of over £100,000. 677 had received offers between £30,000 and £100,000. 806 claimants had received offers of less than £30,000. And 1,497 claimants were deemed not eligible for compensation at all. In an effort to do damage control on the UK's notorious reputation, 2019 saw the instatement of National Windrush Day. They also invited communities to bid for a maximum share of £25,000 of the total grant fund of up to £500,000 to celebrate and educate the significance of the Windrush generation. This amount was increased to up to £750,000 this year to mark the 75th anniversary. This is an extract from the government website with regards to Windrush Day Grant Scheme 2023. As of today, HM Government has dedicated £3.75 million in funding toward honouring the Windrush legacy. This includes £2.75 million across 5 years of the Windrush Day Grant Scheme, and £1 million allocated to the National Windrush Monument, which stands as a fitting tribute to the contributions of the Windrush passengers and their descendants to the UK. Legacy. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. After being enslaved for generations by its colonial oppressors, the Caribbean still answered the UK's call for help during World War II. Once the war was over, servicemen and their families once again came to the aid of the UK to help rebuild the country and its systems. Rather than learn from the horrific past it had inflicted on so many of its colonies and be humbled by the compassion shown by Caribbeans, many have said it repaid their altruistic nature with unwavering institutional racism and reinvigorated subjugation. With all of this said, the resilience, innovation, courage, strength of mind, body and spirit that has overstood so much adversity throughout generations is testament to a wonderful people whose purpose is greater than this world. We give thanks for this generation. The most powerful way to honour them is for us all to be diligent in our research, thorough in our knowledge, vigilant in our intuition, and and relentless in our ambition. All whilst keeping true to ourselves. Blessed love.
This is dedicated to, well, you know who you are.
A different